Support for the Exchange Podcast comes from you, our sustaining members, and from New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Last night's presidential debate turned quickly into a 90-minute argument, with the moderator struggling to maintain order. Among the issues President Trump and former Vice President Biden fought about: the pandemic, law enforcement, climate change, the economy, racism, and right-wing versus left-wing groups. Today in The Exchange, we're looking back at last night's event, and listeners, we'd love your thoughts and reactions. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook, or you can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. We're talking with Dean Spiliotis, longtime New Hampshire political observer and the civic scholar at SNHU. Also, Beatrice Elizabeth Peterson, 2020 campaign reporter for ABC News. Well, a big welcome to both of you. It was a late night. I appreciate you being here. Beatrice, I want to start with you. You've covered lots of presidential debates. What were your overall impressions, Beatrice, of this one?
You know, I agree with a lot of people who said this yesterday. This was a debate that I've never expected and I never thought I'd see. You know, it's one thing when you have a debate and you are socially distant. This is the first ever socially distant type of debate. But, you know, you also have two people on stage who have a longstanding kind of feud that goes back several years. So this is the first time that we've been able to see them fully interact in a conversation. And well, it was fireworks last night on both sides. However, you know, it wasn't from most of the voters I've spoken to over the last couple of hours, there wasn't a clear winner. Some diehard Biden supporters texted me that they weren't really happy. They didn't get people that were uncommitted or undecided, couldn't hear the issues and couldn't take away, you know, what exactly were either candidate pitching for their future version of America.
Well, Beatrice, you called it a conversation. That's not the word that a lot of people are using this morning. You're calling it chaos. So what did you make of that, Beatrice? The fact that it was basically 90 minutes of people just shouting over each other.
You know, it was interesting. The Biden campaign in the lead up to the debate kept talking about wanting to talk about kitchen table issues. However, I'm not sure that got across. I mean, every time Biden tried to speak directly at the camera, in the background, you would hear President Trump, you know, interjecting with, you know, his different opinions and his different takes on Biden's pitch to America. So it wasn't, it was a little bit off the rails. And at various points, I mean, anyone who was watching at home, and unfortunately for the people who didn't watch at home, you would see during the debate, moderator Chris Wallace interject and say, "Hey guys, like, you know, don't talk over each other. Hey guys, please don't talk over each other." I haven't seen anything quite like that since I was teaching elementary school many years ago. And yes, it wasn't what you would expect from two elder statesmen, two 70-year-old statesmen who are trying to pitch themselves to America.
Well, moderator Chris Wallace struggled throughout the event to control it. And I just want to play for listeners who didn't watch last night. Here's one example, one of many, many, many examples we could play. But here's one example after President Trump attacks the vice president's son, Hunter Biden, for alleged business dealings with a Russian woman. And we're going to hear Chris Wallace, the moderator, try to let Biden respond according to the rules of the debate.
I mean, his family, we could talk about all night. His family's
my
already...
Family, yeah, no, no, my family already lost a fortune by coming down and helping us with government.
Ahead, and that's such a...
Right here, Mr. President.
Every single one of them lost
this
a fortune.
This is not about my family or his family. It's about your family. The American people.
$3.5 million.
That's not true. It doesn't want to talk about what you need. You, the American people. It's about you. That's what we're talking about.
All right, that's the end of the, that's the end of the segment. We're moving on.
It didn't take them.
Well, Vice President, no.
Can I be honest? It's a very important question.
Try to be honest.
No,
the answer to the question is no.
Ukraine.
No, sir.
With $1 billion, if you don't get rid of the
Russians. You know what? You're not true.
You're doing it.
You're going to have.
True.
Gentlemen. I hate to raise my voice, but it seems to be, why shouldn't I be different than the two of you?
Phew. Okay, Dean Spiliotis. food fight, chaos, kindergarten mayhem, all sorts of words being used this morning by commentators to describe what happened last night. What would you use?
Yeah, you know, as Beatrice mentioned, certainly not like any debate I've ever seen before. I don't know who thought that this format would be a good idea, given our previous experiences with President Trump, campaign rallies, White House press conferences, et cetera. You know, we knew that he was going to come in aggressive fashion. We knew from advanced reporting that he was going to make it personal about Joe Biden. His goal really is to make this a choice between two candidates rather than a referendum on the incumbent president himself. I think if it's a referendum on him, he's got a much more difficult task ahead of him than if he can make it about a choice between him and Joe Biden and do his best as he is trying to denigrate Biden as a candidate. So we knew there was going to be some of this coming into the debate. You know, did we predict that there was going to be this level of intensity and chaos? You know, perhaps not. There's only so much the moderator can do to rein in the debaters if they're not willing to abide by the rules. I think Wallace kind of started to get a hold of the debate towards the second half. Maybe they were just tiring a little bit. But the first 45 minutes or so was just very, very difficult. I don't think it's going to make much of a difference in terms of moving any potentially undecided, the few undecided voters that are left. You know, I think Joe Biden did fine. You know, it wasn't a particularly remarkable performance. He was a little bit flat at times. Some of his answers, particularly on climate and on court packing, were not particularly strong. But the bigger question is, could this have been predicted? I think so at some level. Could it have been prevented? I don't know. The format for the next two debates are different. I think the next one is a town hall. Maybe that will make a difference. I'm sure they're having conversations right now with the Presidential Debate Commission about giving some sort of, you know, engineering control over the microphones, perhaps during those 2 minute initial responses. But it was certainly a spectacle. I think some of it was predictable. I don't know that it's going to make that much of a difference, but we got some interesting hints about what the next month is going to be like, I think, from what both candidates said.
Well, and Dean, to what you said about does it make a difference, and you and I have talked about this many times before.
Yes.
Do debates matter? I mean, is there really any such thing as an undecided voter these days?
Yeah, well, we're certainly highly polarized. Most polling shows that about 90%+ of voters have already made up their minds. I think there's a general belief among analysts that this is going to be a base mobilization election, not two candidates battling for the undecideds in the middle. You know, certainly polling data has showed that President Trump, in comparison to 2016, this time around is struggling a little bit with a lot, actually, with women, particularly suburban Republican women. He's lost a lot of ground with college-educated white males. If his goal was to try to win back some of those folks rather than get his base stoked to get out there and poll watch and challenge mail-in ballots around the states, he certainly did not accomplish that. You know, I think his campaign would like him to do some of that. I just don't think that's really his instinct to do so. So, you know, the more general question of whether or not debates matter, you know, some people talk about, you know, Ronald Reagan's first debate against Jimmy Carter in 1980 as kind of sealing the deal. A lot of times these things have kind of a transitory bump in polling one way or the other. But in the end, you know, most people are kind of locked in based on more structural considerations like healthcare, the economy, potential for a foreign threat, those kinds of things.
Well, and Beatrice, one more question just on sort of the show of this last night. And then I do have lots of questions about what came up around climate, law enforcement, racism, right-wing versus left-wing groups, and so forth. But as a longtime TV person, Beatrice, you know, Dean's right. The upcoming moderators of the next debates were for sure watching and for sure saying, boy, we don't want to let this thing melt down like last night did. What lessons can they take away from what we saw last night, Beatrice?
You know, I think the next debate is going to be a town hall, which the format is going to make it much more different. I think you'll see probably a little bit more emotion. One thing I'm very, as a person, I'm very excited that they were both socially distant on the stage. So that was a great thing. I just wish that we would have been able to see more of the crowd reaction and more of the going on behind the scenes, rather than just the straight camera for the two of them. But that may have been a debate commission decision. It probably was. The debate commission was very strict, and they said during the rules right before the debate took off that people in the crowd were not allowed to clap. And they actually stayed to it, you know, on both sides, whether they were supporters of the former vice president or the current president, they were not clapping. They were not cheering. They just allowed the two men on stage to have their time. However, with the town hall, you'll get to see real people, and you will get to see more emotion and more back and forth on various issues.
I want to remind our listeners that we'd love your reactions, your thoughts. If you watched the debate last night, and if you didn't watch, tell us why and whether you plan to watch the next one. Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Send us a quick email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook if you'd like. Again, the email exchange@nhpr.org. With us now on the phone is Ross Berry. He's treasurer of the New Hampshire Young Republicans. He's going to give us his impression of the debate. Welcome, Ross. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me on. It's always great to be on with you.
Well, so what'd you think of the debate overall, Ross?
I think you said it earlier, there was a lot of chaos on the stage. And at the core of this, voters had to look at this and cut down to what is the central message that these two candidates are delivering. And I think President Trump delivered his point accurately, which is Joe Biden has had 47 years in elected office to fix these problems that he's talking about. And Donald Trump has had 47 months. And I think when we actually start breaking this down, Americans are going to have to ask ourselves, do we want somebody who has been in office longer than I have been alive, 30 years old, and has failed to deliver time and time again, or are we going to continue down the path of change, which is what voters opted for when we elected Donald Trump?
What did you not like about it, Ross?
I have, and I've said this before on this program, I think, I am not a fan of talking over each other. I've never liked that. We saw that from both candidates, including Joe Biden. I've never been a fan of that in politics. I never will be.
What was the most important message that your guy, President Trump, delivered last night? What do you think, Ross? There was a lot of messages, of course, in 90 minutes, you'd expect that. But sometimes it was hard to pull out the messages because there was so much shouting. So what was the most important message for you from the president?
I think the most important message from the president is focusing on the economy. And we know that this is an area where President Donald Trump is extremely strong. We see it in the polls. And we had an incredibly strong economy before we were hit by COVID-19. And we are making an astonishing comeback. Our comeback from COVID-19 is much faster than we saw with the Great Recession underneath Obama and Biden. So I think that was the core of his message. He did really well. That is his wheelhouse. And I think that is an area ultimately the majority of voters make their decisions on who they think is going to perform for them in the economy and jobs and everything. And I think when President Trump, Joe Biden wants to deflect and talk about, oh, Trump only cares about the stock market. Well, 55% of Americans are invested in the stock market. How many people do you know have a 401k and retirement plans? And Joe Biden's trying to have his cake and eat it too. He's trying to simultaneously say that he is the Democrat Party, which is what he announced last night. He said, I am the Democrat Party. But if you're the Democrat Party, Vice President Biden, you own their policies. You own the extreme left agenda. You own the Green New Deal. You own the anarchy in the cities. You own all of that. That's your party.
Well, and I'll ask our guests a little bit later about how Joe Biden tried to distinguish himself from the left wing of his party. I do have to ask you, though, about the president being given the opportunity to distance himself from the right wing. This is getting a lot of play this morning, Ross. I'm sure you know about it. How do you feel about the president's message to the right wing group, the Proud Boys? He said, stand back and stand by, not stand down, sort of tamping down the violence we're seeing. And these groups already, as soon as he said that, have shown they're quite happy to have the president's support. How do you feel about that, Ross?
Well, let's make something very clear here, because the underlying tone here is, you know, is the white supremacist movement. That has and has never had a place in the modern Republican Party. We are the party that freed the slaves. It is a core part of who we are. And I believe the president misspoke there. I believe he meant to say stand down. But I look at what he said specifically about this issue before. And we saw this with Mr. Wallace bringing up the Charlottesville incident. And the media loves to misrepresent what Trump said there. In that same speech, the Charlottesville speech where they talk about good people on both sides, Trump condemned white supremacy no less than three times. I've got some quotes here. We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America. I've condemned neo-Nazis. I've condemned many different groups. So he's done this time and time again, and the media fails to report it. And I think we saw a moment of frustration where when you keep getting asked the same question over and over again, specifically, do you condemn white supremacists, and you keep saying, yes, I unequivocally condemn them, and you keep getting asked about it, I think it was a moment of frustration. Could he have done a little better there and come out again and said, once again, I condemn white supremacy? Absolutely. But I think when you look at the history of this, his stance on this has been very clear, and it has been grossly misreported in the media.
So the Proud Boys now have a meme and a T-shirt that says, standing by, Mr. President. What's your message to those groups, Ross? And what do you think the president might have done better with that question?
I think he should have said stand down. I believe he misspoke. I'm not him. But once again, white supremacy in that movement has no place in my Republican Party. It's not the Republican Party that I know.
So what would you like to see change, if anything, for the next debate, Ross? I know you'll be watching, and we've talked about how the format will be different. And you've also said, look, you really didn't like the arguing. So what would you like to see for the next one, Ross?
I think all Americans would love to see that mic button get shut off for both sides. I think that was probably, you know, America's very divided right now. And I think that was probably the most unifying thing I've seen out of the left and the right when talking to my friends on the left is we both said, hey, we would love to see a mute button here.
Okay. Well, and when NHPR does debates, our standard rule is when you interrupt one person, the other person gets an extra 30 seconds. So, you know, that's another incentive to perhaps keep the interrupting down. Ross, busy times. I really appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you so much.
That's Ross Berry, treasurer of the New Hampshire Young Republicans. And later in the hour, we'll hear from the president of the New Hampshire Young Democrats. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So, Dean Spiliotis and Beatrice, I really need to ask you about this Proud Boys moment. And we heard Ross Berry say, look, the president's been unfairly quoted. He's tired of being asked it and so forth. I'm going to play the clip, and then I do want to get your reactions, because this has been all over the news this morning. So let's just hear for a moment. This is Chris Wallace asking President Trump if he's willing to condemn white supremacists and other groups to say that they need to stand down. And you can hear in this clip both Wallace and Biden urging Trump to do so. Let's hear.
Sure, are you prepared to specifically do that?
Do it.
Well, I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it.
Do you want to call them? What do you want to call them? Give me a name.
White supremacists and right
wing. Who would you like me to condemn?
White supremacists and right wing.
Proud Boys, stand back and stand by. But I'll tell you what. Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem. This is a
left-wing.
This is a left-wing problem.
Okay, Beatrice Peterson, how did you hear that? Stand buy, stand back, but not stand down. Are we in the media making too much of this? What do you think, Beatrice?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I have been doing a lot of fact checks over the last couple of weeks in the lead up to the debate. And, you know, I expected the president to defend his remarks about white supremacists. I mean, 2 days after the clashes in Charlottesville, the president gave a speech and he said that, quote, racism is evil and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups. However, he did not say that last night. And I think a number of people that I spoke to, voters, were a little bit turned off because they had not heard what he had said 2 days after Charlottesville. They had not heard some of his remarks over the past couple of years when it comes to race. And they were hoping directly to hear that. However, with the not saying stand down, the Proud Boys last night just put a new logo out with the remarks that the president gave last night. So it was very interesting that he didn't just say that he would condemn the remarks. Later in the evening, right after the debate, President Trump's son, Don Jr., was on TV and he had said, well, maybe it was a misspeak. I think my father misspoke. However, you know, so to speak, the damage was done. He already said what he said on stage. And some voters I spoke to were turned off by the lack of rebuke when it comes to white supremacists.
Well, Dean, real quick, as we head into a break, your thoughts on how this statement came out and then how it was sort of further massaged as the hours rolled on past the debate.
Yeah, no, it was pretty clear as soon as we had that that particular moment that was going to be one of the big moments coming out of the debate. You know, the president either doesn't understand why his language is so problematic, or what you saw on the stage was him in real time trying to think through exactly how to phrase any response so as not to alienate his supporters. He also didn't have much to say about his Charlottesville comments, which Joe Biden laid out very carefully. I mean, it continues to be a problem for him. His language, you know, is what it is at this point. I don't expect that to change. But you knew immediately it was going to be one of the big moments coming out of the debate.
Well, coming up, we'll talk about some other key moments, including how the candidates said they would approach the pandemic, and we'll start taking your emails and calls. So you can email us at exchange@nhpr.org. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And as we heard from the Young Republicans a couple minutes ago, we'll hear from the head of the New Hampshire Young Democrats. All that's coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, a review of last night's presidential debate, the first of three planned for the season. And Exchange listeners, let's hear from you. Did you watch? If so, what did you think? If you didn't watch, tell us why not and whether you plan to do so the next time. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With us for the hour are Dean Spiliotis, longtime New Hampshire political observer and the civic scholar at SNHU. Also, Beatrice Elizabeth Peterson, 2020 campaign reporter for ABC News. And both of you, I'd love to just share a couple emails with you. This person did not give a name. He or she says, I thought Chris Wallace did well overall. He tried to redirect Trump to the question being asked, while Trump was continually interrupting and talking over Biden, who tried to ignore him and keep making his points. This resulted in them both, or all three, talking at once. The disruptions, this person says, were not equal. Trump was much, much worse. When Biden finally said, will you shut up, man? Many of us cheered. So that's one email. Here's another one from Gary in Sugar Hill. To the extent there was dialogue, Biden won, but this was not a debate. It was a street fight, and Trump won the street fight, even while defending the Nazi group Proud Boys. Biden should not participate in future debates. He can win by staying away and pouring his money into campaign TV ads repeating Trump's own racist claims. So let's move on to some of the topics that did come up last night, although it's, again, sometimes hard to tell what came up because there was so much yelling back and forth. But one issue very close to the beginning of the debate was the pandemic. And Beatrice, what were the main messages that you heard from the candidates about how the federal government, especially the White House, should handle this pandemic?
Well, I mean, one of the things that happened top of his remarks were former Vice President Joe Biden talking directly to voters, asking them, you know, do you have an instance where you're sitting at your kitchen table and there's a seat that's empty? And, you know, it played off kind of okay. However, the president was interrupting the former vice president while he was speaking, so it wasn't as clear. I mean, there was a lot of different moments where they did talk about COVID response. However, it really, I don't think, stuck, because there was so much interjecting back and forth that I had a number of voters that texted me and were like, you know, I don't quite understand what is going on here. What is the vice president's response to President Trump's response to COVID? You know, what is going on here? I think you hear more on the campaign trail for both of the candidates at their rallies than you heard last night at the debate while the two of them were bickering about various issues. So it just wasn't clear. I think that, you know, there was a back and forth about pre-existing conditions that happened. You know, COVID in a lot of ways displays a lot of different symptoms after the fact, whether it's lung scarring or just different respiratory issues. But, you know, we didn't really get to hear from the president, you know, what his plan was for healthcare directly. What is the Trump plan for healthcare? You didn't hear it really directly from the vice president really either, because they just, instead of, I think, focusing on their various issues and their various ways to fix it, the two of them were bickering the entire time.
Yeah, it was hard to get some clarity on what more the president wanted to do about the pandemic. And as you said, Beatrice, what Joe Biden would do if he were elected on day one in office. Let's hear a little bit. Here is the part in the debate where President Trump defended his response to the pandemic after Joe Biden said the president had no plan. Let's hear.
Many of your Democrat governors said President Trump did a phenomenal job. We worked with the governor. Oh, really? Go take a look. The governor said I did a phenomenal job. Most of them said that. In fact, people that would not be necessarily on my side said that. President Trump did a phenomenal job. We did. We got the gowns. We got the masks. We made the ventilators. You wouldn't have made ventilators. And now we're weeks away from a vaccine. We're doing therapeutics already. Fewer people are dying when they get sick. Far fewer people are dying. We've done a great job.
Well, and on that point about weeks away from a vaccine, moderator Chris Wallace pointed out Trump's claims about the vaccine had been contradicted by the head of his own CDC, who has said the vaccine will take a lot longer, likely won't be generally available until summertime. Dean Spiliotis, Beatrice told us voters she talked to were frustrated. They wanted to hear more about the pandemic. How do you think these candidates handled Americans' deep concerns about this crisis?
Yeah, a couple of reactions there to the discussion so far. Yeah, I agree with Beatrice that I think those moments where Joe Biden looked directly at the camera, he did it on COVID, and he did it again on the economy and on voting. I think those were his most effective moments. On the clip you just played of President Trump, there's some reporting to suggest otherwise in terms of the governor's responses to what the administration was doing. And certainly, if you remember at the time, particularly early in the pandemic, when governors were meeting, were doing phone calls regularly with the administration, many of them felt beholden to the administration for, because the administration was really stepping in. You remember everybody, each state was kind of negotiating for their own PPE and ventilators, et cetera. And then the administration started stepping in and redirecting. So I think to some extent, they felt they needed to continue to have the good favor of the administration in order to get the equipment. You know, one thing we haven't really mentioned that I think is really crucial coming out of the COVID discussion is this concern about the politicization of the FDA and the CDC, and whether or not Americans are going to trust an early announcement of a potential vaccine. Everybody's waiting for a vaccine so we can all kind of get back to our regular lives. There's been tremendous concern, and there's a fair bit of evidence now suggesting that the administration has been pressuring the CDC and the FDA to toe a particular line on when vaccines will be available. We've seen pharmaceutical companies bend over backwards to say that they're going to independently verify the safety of those vaccines. We've seen the FDA suggest that they may actually raise the safeguards on deciding when a vaccine is safe. The administration immediately pressed back on that, saying that they would have to approve that. So I think the debate over how many people have died, it's obviously tragic. You know, that's one issue. The second issue is this concern that I and others have about whether or not the CDC and the FDA, which we've always looked to for expertise, are in some way being pressured or manipulated on this vaccine issue, because the administration sees it as a winner. If they can announce that we can all start being vaccinated in December or January, and that is an increasingly big part of the COVID discussion.
Well, we spoke earlier with a leader of the New Hampshire Young Republicans. He gave us his take on the debate. And with us now is Ashley Marcoux, president of the New Hampshire Young Democrats. And Ashley, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you so much for having me.
So your impressions, Ashley, of the debate overall?
So I think that Joe Biden did exactly what he needed to do last night, and Donald Trump pretty much precisely failed. I think Donald Trump came across as unhinged, desperate, and like a bully, not only to Joe Biden, but also to Chris Wallace, who he was intimidating last night, using his position as president to get more time and kind of talk over everybody else. Joe Biden, on the other hand, was calm, controlled, and he showed America what our presidency could look like again. He spoke directly to the American people on the issues, and I was really impressed.
What did you not like about it, Ashley? Ross, for example, from the Young Republicans earlier told us he didn't like all the bickering.
I completely want to echo Ross's point on that. I thought that, you know, at times it just looked like it was three, white men yelling at each other on the TV screen and not a whole lot of substantive policy debates. So I thought the format of it was just disappointing to the office. And I'd like to see a stronger moderator in future debates.
Well, and there were lots of issues. I use the word discussed loosely because, again, it wasn't really a discussion, but there were a lot of issues on the table. Let's put it that way, Ashley. What do you think the most important message around the issues was that Joe Biden delivered?
I think that his message on racial sensitivity training contrasted to the president. Joe Biden demonstrated a understanding of, you know, take a mile, walk in another American's shoes, and you'll understand what is demeaning to them, versus the president just, again, could not even condemn white supremacy and really just complained that people like him don't need racial bias training, which I think most people in America would agree is good and healthy and healing for our country. So, yeah.
The Republican National Committee this morning is saying that, Joe Biden appeared weak, unready to lead, and that in a time of crisis, which we are certainly in, Americans need a strong leader. Even some Democrats are saying they're disappointed. They feel like Joe Biden just let President Trump roll over him. How concerned are you, Ashley, as a Democrat about that?
I couldn't disagree more. I mean, I think that Joe Biden, in his composure and his ability to just stay kind of focused on the questions, and Donald Trump, on the other hand, just completely bullish, was not listening to the moderator, was not listening to you know, even when he was going back and forth with Joe Biden, just he demonstrates himself as a type of leader who only listens to his own voice, versus Joe Biden is bringing in scientists, experts, policy, and he's the type of leader that I think is bringing people into the table to face unprecedented challenges, versus Donald Trump is just a narcissist who thinks only he can get the job done. And he's proven himself to fail at that. His record, you know, 200,000 Americans are dead, 30 million are on unemployment. His record speaks for itself, and I think Joe Biden does the same, and he just needs to hold the president accountable to what has happened under his presidency.
Well, and speaking of holding these candidates accountable, what would you like to see change in the next debate, Ashley? We talked earlier about how the moderators of the next debates are certainly looking at their plans and considering what happened last night.
I want to echo what was said earlier. I would really like to see some mics pulled. I think the state of our politics are kind of showing that maybe we are not adults enough to be able to just talk over each other whenever we want to, and that the American people just deserve better than what they got last night.
Well, Ashley, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Laura.
That's Ashley Marcoux, president of the New Hampshire Young Democrats. We spoke earlier with the New Hampshire Young Republicans. And Beatrice and Dean, since Ashley mentioned that one of the things she liked about the debate was Joe Biden's response to questions about why voters should trust him over the president to deal with systemic racism in our country, let's hear Biden's response to that.
It's about equity and equality. It's about decency. It's about the Constitution. And we have never walked away from trying to require equity for everyone, equality for the whole of America. But we've never accomplished it. But we've never walked away from it like he has done. It is true. The reason I got in the race is when those people, close your eyes, remember what those people look like coming out of the fields carrying torches, their veins bulging, spewing anti-Semitic bile, and accompanied by the Ku Klux Klan. A young woman got killed. And they asked the president what he thought. He said there were very fine people on both sides.
Well, and Beatrice, when President Trump was asked a similar question, he, you know, talked about it briefly, but very quickly went into law enforcement. So how did you hear, Beatrice, the issue of systemic racism folded into or devolving into a law enforcement issue?
Well, I just want to go back to what the former vice president said just a moment ago in the soundbite.
Sure.
That is a common place on the campaign trail. That is a part of his stump. That is something, if you tune into a Joe Biden event, you will hear him talk about the battle for the soul of America. You know, the president, however, it has doubled down, tripled down, especially since the uprisings have happened nationally on race and police violence. You know, there has been a doubling down from the president on law and order. He has always said that he was a law and order president. And he at one point had an exchange with the former vice president on who had more endorsements by the police union. You know, and it was very interesting because the former vice president this campaign just a couple of days ago sent out a press release to reporters touting that he had endorsements from law enforcement officials across the country, over 100. But that was never brought up by the former vice president, which was very interesting. I mean, you had, you know, the president trying to say that former Vice President Joe Biden was trying to defund the police. That is not the case, which is to the irritation on some in the left that Biden is not for defunding the police and reallocating funds to social projects and social issues in the community. So it's very interesting. I think that, you know, there is a clear difference when it comes to policing in America between the two candidates. However, I don't think that came across last night to the voters.
Yeah, well, there was a lot, as you said earlier, Beatrice, that got muddled because there was so much arguing. And Joe Biden in that clip did use that very fine people on both sides comment that's been widely repeated. And Ross Perot from Young Republicans earlier took issue with that. He said the press didn't cover President Trump's subsequent condemnation of white supremacy. So, Dean, I'm going to ask you very quickly what you think about all that.
Yeah, no, it's very clear that President Trump, whenever confronted with a discussion of race, very quickly pivots to law and order, urban violence. This has really become what he believes is the winning issue for him this time around. It's really replaced the build the wall of 2016 and immigrant caravans of 2018 when he was trying to help Republicans at the midterm. You know, the goal here is to essentially scare voters that that if Vice President Biden wins, we're going to all be subject to urban violence and chaos, et cetera. So he sees law and order as his big winning issue this time around. And any discussion of race, he's going to naturally pivot as quickly as possible. And that's essentially what we saw last night.
You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So Dean and Beatrice, let's talk a little bit more about the economy. And Dean, to you first, the president's charge that Joe Biden would shut it down. How much of a concern is that, given the economic pressures of the pandemic and the shutdowns? We here in New Hampshire, our restaurant industry, for example, is really struggling. So I just wonder what you thought about that theme, Dean.
Yeah, no, I think it's an area where Vice President Biden and Democrats running for re-election in general need to be very careful and very clear about explaining what they mean when they say, you know, shut down particular sectors. No one is really talking about a national shutdown anymore, but there's certainly concern. And Joe Biden, I think, mentioned about small businesses failing. We know restaurants are taking a beating, service industry, tourism, all those kinds of things. So part of the debate has been, we're hearing from the infectious disease community, the expert medical community, that there's a lot more we should be doing in terms of how we roll out reopening schools, reopening businesses. And I think that Democrats and Biden certainly have typically sided with the medical experts, but they do need to be sensitive to, in adopting that argument that the way you open the economy is by first fully tamping down the infection. That's the argument that the medical community is making. Biden has to figure out how to make that argument without people worrying that things are going to get even worse than they currently are.
And Dean, I'm going to cut you off there for just a moment. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're looking back at what happened during last night's presidential debate, some of the themes that came up, and what the candidates said about them. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. We'd love your reactions. exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 1-800-892-6477. Helping us out this hour, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar at SNHU, and Beatrice Elizabeth Peterson, 2020 campaign reporter for ABC News. And both of you, let's go right back to our listeners. And Kathy is calling from Manchester. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. I watched, I just started listening to your show, so I got a late start this morning, so maybe somebody has said this. And I did watch the debate last night until about 9:36, and I could not listen and watch, mostly listen, to those two men. And it reminded me of a couple of guys who are neighbors, Joe and Donald, who live on the same street and do not see eye to eye, and everybody knows it, and they're sitting at a bar, and we're all listening to them. Joe this, Donald that. It just irritated me, just the calling of people by their first name. This is not a presidential debate that we saw.
So, Kathy, given your visceral reaction to all the arguing that we saw, are you going to watch the next debate?
I probably will, but I'm going to have to get a message. I will try to. I don't know. As I said, I watched 36 minutes of it, and I think I'm going to be voting for Biden, but Biden had better not fall into that, continue to fall in the trap of debating with Donald. Instead, just refer to him as Mr. President, which he is, or Mr. Trump. and answer the question looking at the moderator or the camera.
So don't take the bait. Kathy, thank you for calling in. And Beatrice, what do you think? I heard some other Democrats say this morning. They were kind of disappointed that Joe Biden didn't do a better job just kind of staying above it all, as Kathy wanted him to do.
Well, you know, I agree with Kathy. We were hearing from the Biden campaign over the last 24 hours that this would not be the vice president doing a fact check. He was going to just leave President Donald Trump's words as his own. However, at a point, there was no even chance to fact check because the two were just bickering on stage. And I think she had a point that, you know, I think a lot of people were hoping to hear more and they just did not hear anything. I heard from a number of people that they could not watch the entire debate. She clocked out in 36 minutes in, and I heard from a lot of people that didn't make it even that long. They were hoping that there'd be a commercial break and it never came. So they created their own commercial break and watched something else.
Well, Dan in Peterborough had a similar reaction to Kathy's. Dan says Trump's constant interruptions talking over Biden and his overall demeanor were appalling. You'll hear spin that, quote, Biden did it too, but this is simply not true. Anyone who watched the debate could see Biden did his best to stay calm and work through the chaos to make his points, but Trump was relentless. Dan says, I think it would be entirely fair and appropriate for sound engineers or someone to mute the microphone of the person whose turn to speak it isn't. Make it clear in the agreed upon rules beforehand that this will happen if you inappropriately speak out of turn and follow through doing it even-handedly. And I'm going to be moderating 4 debates coming up in a couple weeks. So you can better believe I'm watching this. So thank you, Dan. Thank you, Kathy, for weighing in. And Dean Spiliotis, I'd love for you to weigh in too. Sure. We keep hearing from listeners who were just, you know, crazy about how things rolled out last night.
Yeah, you know, all of this really speaks to the extent to which our political discourse has become debased and degraded over the last 5 to 10 years. I think a lot of it is driven by social media, people losing their public filters, all the niceties and decorum and formality of the presidency and presidential debates are gone. Certainly President Trump bears some responsibility for that. You know, there's a time when a challenger, as Joe Biden did, calling the president a clown and telling him to shut up, and the president attacking a member of Joe Biden's family, and, you know, repeatedly going after his son Hunter, even while Vice President Biden was very poignantly recounting the military service and death of his older son Beau. All of that stuff, people just would have been shocked and dismayed. Unfortunately, that's no longer the case. And I'm sure there are a lot of discussions going on right now about how to better control the town hall. The town hall introduces the added element of voters. And you can imagine how complicated it would be for President Trump to interrupt and talk over voters. So he's going to need to be a little bit more careful on that. He did a town hall, I think, with ABC News pretty recently, in which he had real difficulty going back, engaging voters. And I think he needs to, you know, outside of the MAGA rallies, he needs to be a little more sensitive in a town hall setting. But I'm not sure what the answer is. You know, they can, the campaigns can perhaps agree to some kind of muting during initial statements. But I just, you know, it's the level of our discourse. You know, I've been studying the presidency for almost 3 decades, and the level of discourse now, compared to 20, 30 years ago, it's just, it often makes me very sad, but it just is the way it is now.
Well, and we heard from Kathy, who was disappointed that Joe Biden, she felt, sort of didn't try and stay above it all. And then Dan, our emailer, says he feels Biden did his best to stay calm. Dean, just real quickly, what do you think about those sort of two different takes on what they saw from the former vice president?
Yeah, I think there's going to be real disagreement about, you know, whether or not Biden was a little too passive. I think some people would have liked to have seen him push back a little more. You know, they're the same generation. They've known each other for a long time. There is a level of kind of familiarity there. They've both been at the peak of the national political stage. I just think that's going to be kind of the nature of the debate. I'm sure there's some disagreement within Biden's campaign about, you know, maybe there were times where he could have pushed back a little bit harder. But we did hear going into this, and I think perhaps Beatrice mentioned this earlier, that the Biden campaign made an initial decision not to engage that kind of interaction. But I just think when you're in the heat of it, it's a very, very difficult thing. There were some, I think, some key moments, like on his son, Bo, where he pushed back in a way that I think is effective. But yeah, you know, it's just, Biden can kind of go either way. He can be sometimes a little quiet, but we also see he does have a temper at times as well.
Well, and I want to ask both of you about one other huge issue that came up last night, and that has to do with the voting itself. So last night, the candidates were asked about the validity of the election, given the rising number of absentee ballots and given the president's statements recently that he might not abide by the results if he doesn't think that they are valid. So Beatrice, you're out covering this campaign nationwide. What are voters saying about this?
Well, you know, I think a lot of voters out there are trying to figure out how they're going to vote themselves, depending on what part of the country you're in. You know, some states have opened up a lot more and have had lower coronavirus cases. Some areas are still struggling to figure out how to reopen, how to send kids back to school safely. And so the top line I hear from most voters is, you know, how do I go out to vote? Do I mail it in? You know, where do I vote? I even had a very close friend of mine call me yesterday and tell me, you know, I live in New York now, but I vote in Texas normally. How do I even update my voter registration? And this is a very well-educated millennial. So, you know, it's interesting. I do think a lot of people are concerned about the transfer of power from Democrats. However, you know, it's still so early to even know what the election is going to be like. I think it's going to be more of an election week. You know, we may not know probably the next day of the election just because you have just so many different formats of voting. But both campaigns have lawyers on the ground, lawyers who are volunteering their time to make sure that this is a fair process on both sides. You know, poll watchers are standing by, and you just have a lot of different investments by both campaigns to make sure that this goes smoothly either way.
You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So, Dean, what evidence exists that these absentee ballots are not being properly tracked? And I guess my follow-up question, Dean, is at this point, how much does the evidence convince anybody who might have those concerns?
Yeah, no, we've had the president's own FBI director and I believe the director of national intelligence both come out and say that there's no evidence. There's just no evidence of systemic fraud with absentee ballots. Or mail-in ballots. We had the same discussion, you and I, Laura, back with the Voter Integrity Commission that Trump created after 2016 because he was upset. He wanted to explain why Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million votes. You know, President Trump made his strategy very clear last night. We know that Democrats are requesting mail-in ballots at much higher rates than Republicans. In swing states, it's quite possible that President Trump will be leading on election night, and then the Democratic votes will come in, be counted over the following week, and tip in the other direction. And his goal, and we heard it very clearly, is going to be to block, challenge, call into question anything that comes beyond in-person voting on election day. And so I think, you know, we all remember 2000, what that was like as we waited for the Supreme Court to weigh in on the Florida recount. You know, we may very well have Florida recount style lawsuits in multiple states in November and early December. You know, and they're supposed, I think December 8th, the Electoral College is supposed to ratify all of this. We shall see. But I think Trump made it pretty clear last night that he's going to do anything he can to challenge what he sees as a process that does not favor him electorally.
Well, and Beatrice, you are again covering this race nationwide, so we really appreciate you being with us today. What's next for you, Beatrice? What's the next place or issue or event that you're going to be covering?
Well, I am doing the very glamorous job of covering Kamala Harris. She is, well, there's a pool location outside of her home. And so campaign reporters stake out outside for about 12 hours a day, noticing comings and goings. So I say it's glamorous, but it is not. it is 12 hours in a car watching Secret Service and watching to see if she leaves her house or comes. So we'll see.
All right. Well, Beatrice, please join us again. It was great to have you.
All right. Thank you for having me.
That's Beatrice Elizabeth Peterson, 2020 campaign reporter for ABC News. And Dean Spiliotis, really nice to have you too. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Laura. My pleasure.
That's Dean Spiliotis, longtime New Hampshire political observer and the civic scholar at Southern New Hampshire University. Today's show was produced by Exchange senior producer Ellen Grimm, and you've been listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.